Welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. On the show today, Ashley Thompson and I travel to the American Southwest to visit a national park with a scary-sounding name. Then, Dan Friedel brings us a report about robot cooks. And of course, we end the program with another classic American story. But first, Brian Lynn has a report on a visit to the White House that anyone can make.
Most people will never get a chance to go inside the White House, the famous home of the President of the United States. But new application software can bring the White House to life for anyone with a telephone equipped for computer programs. To experience this famous building, you just need your smartphone and an American $1 bill. The new app is called 1600, which makes one think of the real street address of the White House, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C. The 1600 app uses augmented reality in the same way as the virtual reality game Pokemon Go. The app creates a small version of the White House on your smartphone. After downloading it, just point the camera on the phone at a dollar bill to start the experience. The dollar then transforms into a three-dimensional model of the White House before your eyes. It creates images having length, width, and height. When the smartphone is moved around, the images of the building also change. U.S. President Barack Obama's press secretary, Josh Earnest, provides commentary as part of the app. He provides historical information about the White House, talks about how the building is used today, and describes some events held there. The app shows some of the changes on the White House grounds throughout the year. You can watch the Easter egg roll in springtime and see a state arrival ceremony for a foreign leader. There is even a hidden surprise to catch if you touch on the President's Oval Office. We hope you enjoy and share this new way of taking a peek inside the White House, Earnest said on whitehouse.gov. The new app is the latest way the Obama administration has used technology as an educational tool. This time, it gives people all over the world the chance to virtually visit the People's House. First Lady Michelle Obama has said the White House is also called the People's House because it is a place where all people should feel welcome. I'm Brian Lynn.
This week on our national parks journey, we travel to the southwestern state of Arizona. There we find a strange and colorful landscape. Yellow, red, and even purple rocks and sand cover the hilly earth. Huge pieces of ancient trees twist in unusual ways. The area is the only national park that includes a part of the historic U.S. Route 66. Welcome to the Petrified Forest National Park.
The word forest may mislead visitors. The park is in a desert, and the word petrified, which can mean afraid, may scare visitors away. But fear not. Petrified Forest gets its name from the trees that have, over millions of years, turned to stone. That natural process is called fossilization. Much of the petrified forest formed from tall trees called conifers. They grew over 200 million years ago near waterways. During floods, water forced the trees up from the ground. Over time, the wood from the trees became petrified.
The Petrified Forest National Park is one of the wonders of Arizona. It sits within the Painted Desert. A Spanish explorer in the 1500s gave the place its name. It is easy to see why. The desert looks like an artist's canvas. Brilliantly colored mudstones and clays cover the land as far as the eye can see. They contain bentonite, a clay that is the product of changed volcanic ash. The oldest geological formations in the park are about 227 million years old. Differently colored formations show different time periods. The Blue Mesa formations, for example, have thick bands of gray, purple, blue, and green mudstones. They are about 220 million years old.
Evidence of humans in the petrified forest dates back 13,000 years. People first came here after the last ice age. Early Paleo-Indian groups used the petrified wood to create different kinds of stone tools. They used them to hunt large animals. The climate warmed over several thousand years. Humans began building villages here and growing food, such as corn, squash, and beans. In the 900s, people in the area began building above-ground houses called pueblos. They also made pottery for cooking and other uses. Scientists today find evidence of early pottery and pueblo homes all over Petrified Forest National Park.
A long and severe drought in the early 1400s forced most of the people living here to move. But new groups soon arrived. European explorers came in the 1500s. By the 1800s, American pioneers began settling in the area. And by the 1920s, American motorists were traveling on U.S. Route 66. The road winds through the heart of the Painted Desert. Long before humans entered the area, though, dinosaurs dominated. Petrified Forest National Park is a world-class area for fossil research. The fossil record at the park preserves some of the earliest dinosaurs. The dinosaur fossils are from the late Triassic period, called the Dawn of the Dinosaurs. They help scientists reconstruct ancient environments.
The land here was set aside as a national monument in 1906. Congress moved to protect it because of its unique ecosystem, record of human history, and dramatic southwestern scenery. It became a national park in 1962. More than 800,000 people visit the Petrified Forest National Park each year. The best way to explore the park is by foot. The National Park Service maintains many kilometers of walking trails. The Crystal Forest Trail is a 1 kilometer path. It is named for the crystals that can be seen on the pieces of petrified wood. The trail is one of the best chances to see this fossilized wood up close.
The petrified forest includes many shapes and sizes of wood. From large logs to stumps, to the smallest remains of plants. Most of the petrified wood found in the park is made up of quartz. Quartz is a hard, colorless mineral. The wood sometimes shines in the sunlight as if covered by glitter.
The Painted Desert Rim Trail offers visitors a good chance to see the park's wildlife. Lizards and rabbits are common. So are snakes and foxes. Early morning or evening are the best times to see animals. These are also the times when the sun makes the Painted Desert the most colorful and spectacular. But whenever you choose to visit, the Petrified Forest and Painted Desert will awaken your senses and your curiosity about this ancient place.
Would your pizza have a different taste if it were prepared by a robot? That is the question people are asking as some American businesses test food preparation robots. A startup company in California called Zoom is testing machines that make pizza. The robot takes and shapes dough to create the base of the pizza. It then adds tomato sauce, cheese, meat, or other toppings. Next, the robot places the uncooked pizza into a hot oven. A few minutes later, the pizza is ready. The pizza comes out the same each time. Zoom says the robots work quickly and do not get sick. the robots do not get paid either. Julia Collins is the company's founder and chief executive officer. Her business can spend money on better food products because it does not have to pay the robots. We spend less money on repetitive labor, she says. The important question for the company's success is, how does the pizza taste? Charity Suzuki has bought the robot-made pizza. She likes its taste.
It's delicious. It's always hot and fresh when it comes. And I mean, it's great that they're making it, but I can't tell the difference that it's made by a robot versus a human.
Zoom said it is also testing another idea. A truck equipped with over 50 ovens. The truck will arrive at your home just as the pizza comes out of the hot oven. That makes for a fresher, hotter pizza than usual. I'm Dan Friedel.
Now it's time for an American story. Kay Gallant reads The White Heron by Sarah Orne Jewett.
The forest was full of shadows. As a little girl hurried through it one summer evening in June, it was already 8 o'clock, and Sylvie wondered if her grandmother would be angry with her for being so late. Every evening, Sylvie left her grandmother's house at 5:30 to bring their cow home. The old animal spent her days out in the open country eating sweet grass. It was Sylvie's job to bring her home to be milked. When the cow heard Sylvie's voice calling her, she would hide among the bushes. This evening, it had taken Sylvie longer than usual to find her cow. The child hurried the cow through the dark forest, following a narrow path that led to her grandmother's home. The cow stopped at a small stream to drink. As Sylvie waited, she put her bare feet in the cold, fresh water of the stream. She had never before been alone in the forest as late as this. The air was soft and sweet. Sylvie felt as if she were a part of the gray shadows and silver leaves that moved in the evening breeze. She began thinking how it was only a year ago that she came to her grandmother's farm. Before that, she had lived with her mother and father in a dirty, crowded factory town. One day, Sylvie's grandmother had visited them and had chosen Sylvie from all her brothers and sisters to be the one to help her on her farm in Vermont. The cow finished drinking, and as the 9-year-old child hurried through the forest to the home she loved, she thought again about the noisy town where her parents still lived. Suddenly, the air was cut by a sharp whistle not far away. Sylvie knew it wasn't a friendly bird's whistle. It was the determined whistle of a person. She forgot the cow and hid in some bushes. But she was too late. "Hello, little girl," a young man called out cheerfully. "How far is it to the main road?" Sylvie was trembling as she whispered, 2 miles. She came out of the bushes and looked up into the face of a tall young man carrying a gun. The stranger began walking with Sylvie, as she followed her cow through the forest. "I've been hunting for birds," he explained, "but I've lost my way. Do you think I can spend the night at your house?" Sylvie didn't answer. She was glad they were almost home. She could see her grandmother standing near the door of the farmhouse. When they reached her, the stranger put down his gun and explained his problem to Sylvie's smiling grandmother. "Of course you can stay with us," she said. "We don't have much, but you're welcome to share what we have. Now, Sylvie, get a plate for the gentleman." After eating, they all sat outside. The young man explained he was a scientist who collected birds. "Do you put them in a cage?" Sylvie asked. "No," he answered slowly. "I shoot them and stuff them with special chemicals to preserve them. I have over 100 different kinds of birds from all over the United States in my study at home." "Sylvie knows a lot about birds, too," her grandmother said proudly. "She knows the forest so well, the wild animals come and eat bread right out of her hands." "So, Sylvie knows all about birds. Maybe she can help me then," the young man said. "I saw a white heron not far from here 2 days ago. I've been looking for it ever since. It's a very rare bird, the little white heron. Have you seen it too?" he asked Sylvie. But Sylvie was silent. "You would know it if you saw it," he added. "It's a tall, strange bird with soft white feathers and long, thin legs. It probably has its nest at the top of a tall tree." Sylvie's heart began to beat fast. She knew that strange white bird. She had seen it on the other side of the forest. The young man was staring at Sylvie. "I would give $10 to the person who showed me where the white heron is." That night, Sylvie's dreams were full of all the wonderful things she and her grandmother could buy for $10. Sylvie spent the next day in the forest with the young man. He told her a lot about the birds they saw. Sylvie would have had a much better time if the young man had left his gun at home. She could not understand why he killed the birds he seemed to like so much. She felt her heart tremble every time he shot an unsuspecting bird as it was singing in the trees. But Sylvie watched the young man with eyes full of admiration. She had never seen anyone so handsome and charming. A strange excitement filled her heart, a new feeling the little girl did not recognize. Love. At last evening came. They drove the cow home together. Long after the moon came out and the young man had fallen asleep, Sylvie was still awake. She had a plan that would get the $10 for her grandmother and make the young man happy. When it was almost time for the sun to rise, she quietly left her house and hurried through the forest. She finally reached a huge pine tree, so tall it could be seen for many miles around. Her plan was to climb to the top of the pine tree. She could see the whole forest from there. She was sure she would be able to see where the white heron had hidden its nest. Sylvie's bare feet and tiny fingers grabbed the tree's rough trunk. Sharp, dry branches scratched at her like cat's claws. The pine tree's sticky sap made her fingers feel stiff and clumsy as she climbed higher and higher. The pine tree seemed to grow taller the higher that Sylvie climbed. The sky began to brighten in the east. Sylvie's face was like a pale star when at last she reached the tree's highest branch. The golden sun's rays hit the green forest. Two hawks flew together in slow-moving circles far below Sylvie. Sylvie felt as if she could go flying among the clouds, too. To the west, she could see other farms and forests. Suddenly, Sylvie's dark gray eyes caught a flash of white that grew larger and larger. A bird with broad white wings and a long, slender neck flew past Sylvie and landed on a pine branch below her. The white heron smoothed its feathers and called to its mate, sitting on their nest in a nearby tree. Then it lifted its wings and flew away. Sylvie gave a long sigh. She knew the wild bird's secret now. Slowly, she began her dangerous trip down the ancient pine tree. She did not dare to look down and tried to forget that her fingers hurt and her feet were bleeding. All she wanted to think about was what the stranger would say to her when she told him where to find the heron's nest. As Sylvie climbed slowly down the pine tree, the stranger was waking up back at the farm. He was smiling because he was sure from the way the shy little girl had looked at him that she had seen the white heron. About an hour later, Sylvie appeared. Both her grandmother and the young man stood up as she came into the kitchen. The splendid moment to speak about her secret had come. But Sylvie was silent. Her grandmother was angry with her. Where had she been? The young man's kind eyes looked deeply into Sylvie's own dark gray ones. He could give Sylvie and her grandmother $10. He had promised to do this, and they needed the money. Besides, Sylvie wanted to make him happy. But Sylvie was silent. She remembered how the white heron came flying through the golden air, and how they watched the sun rise together from the top of the world. Sylvie could not speak. She could not tell the heron's secret and give its life away. The young man went away disappointed later that day. Sylvie was sad. She wanted to be his friend. He never returned. But many nights Sylvie heard the sound of his whistle as she came home with her grandmother's cow. Were the birds better friends than their hunter might have been? Who can know?
That was Kay Gallant narrating The White Heron by American writer Sarah Orne Jewett. I'm Katie Weaver for VOA Learning English. Thanks for joining us.